Have you subscribed to the OTB Football Podcast?
And in fact, the bloke who man-marked Graham's neck got a broken jaw. Ross Graham, shouldn't laugh.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
And it is with that, it is time for Shane Hannan's Gillette Performance Rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's Performance Rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
All right, at the start of every week, we go through the good, the bad and the grand from the weekend sport. Shane Hannan, we are starting with the bad. Where are we going?
A bad weekend for John Ram. and a weekend that looked like a really good weekend for John Ram, because he loves playing at the Memorial Tournament in Dublin, Ohio, as we saw last year with his win. And then you're thinking three rounds in, Owen, this is going to plan for the Spaniard. And then, of course, you know, he had that six-stroke lead, stunning third round at Muirfield Village. And then he tests positive for COVID-19. He tested negative for four consecutive days. And then that positive test came from a sample collected Saturday morning. And there was a bit of a darkness halt to his second round as well. Had a two-shot lead after that. And then an 8-under-64 in that third round on Saturday had everyone talking. But then what they were all talking about was this little meeting, I guess, where he's informed by officials at the end of his round, immediately after the end of his round, that he has tested positive for COVID-19. So given the news by a PGA Tour medical personnel as he walked off the 18th green, and he spoke about his disappointment afterwards, and you could actually see visibly the disappointment in his face when he's told this news. Look, Patrick Cantlay ends up going on to win the tournament in a playoff against Colin Morikawa. Cantlay called it at the time the worst situation, not the worst situation for him at the end of the whole weekend, but they informed Ram on Monday, the US PGA Tour, that he had been in close contact with someone confirmed with COVID-19. Ram himself was asymptomatic, chose to compete under these tighter virus safety protocols. This involved daily testing, restricted access to the facilities as well, and restricting his contacts. And then that third test, or the test during his third round, returned as positive while he was on the course. And a second test requested by a PGA medical advisor also came back positive just before he finished his third round. So hence the delay, and hence, I guess, Owen, why they waited until the very end of his round to tell him. And he just leaned forward after he got this news and said, not again. The interesting thing for me, Owen, I don't know how you think about this, but Scotty Scheffler, who was his playing partner, one of his playing partners during that third round, said, I think it's terrible they told him in front of the cameras. And I couldn't help but agree, because there was, look, for the fans, a great sense of drama. And all we saw was him being told some bad news, and you kind of feared the worst, and worse than you thought, what's he being told here? Because clearly it's something not very good. But the fact that they did it in front of the cameras, I don't know, it leaves a bit of a sour taste in the mouth.
Yeah, we had like comments from Jack Nicklaus afterwards saying that they should send him a trophy for winning three quarters of the tournament, which was an interesting one. Like, I mean, it's absolutely gutting for John Rahm. Like, initially, when you look at it, it's like this is kind of the dying sting of the pandemic in sport in America, that over the next little while, obviously, as more players get vaccinated, this thing is less likely to happen, you would assume anyway. And this is just one of these stories where we thought we'd kind of gone beyond it at this point. As you say, the public nature of how he found out perhaps doesn't reflect too well on everybody. But what are you going to do? I mean, you're out in the course and you're one of the officials, and all of a sudden you've got this information that the guy who is tearing it up on the course actually shouldn't be out there at all. It's a very, very tricky situation for everyone. But the narrative is there perfectly, Shane, for him to go and win the US Open now.
Yeah, it's set up really well. And the thing is, look, he said in a statement afterwards, look, my family's okay, I'm okay, I'll take all the necessary precautions to get back to normal. And this is the good thing. At least he's asymptomatic, he doesn't feel bad. But it's the worst case scenario for the tournament organisers. If you're the Memorial organisers, you're thinking to yourself, oh no, this is horrific, because golf has done quite well, done very well, in fact, in terms of keeping the virus at bay, ensuring the players and spectators have been, I guess, as safe as possible, and trying to keep the numbers as low as they possibly can, and they have done a seriously good job at that. I know that, I think, wasn't it, that this tournament they were offering out free vaccines to whoever, I guess, wanted them. Some players had them, some players didn't. But, you know, he's been the man that everyone loves to watch and play well at in recent tournaments. He's only 26 years of age at the end of the day as well. So it is, as you said, set up incredibly nicely for the US Open. Regardless of this, he'll go in as one of the tournament favourites because of that 64 on Saturday was just impeccable. And it was just drama at its most heightened sense, because you saw some of the US networks as well having their, I guess, on-course reporters milling around the clubhouse afterwards and just waiting to hear what this information was. And like, there was a great clip online of one of the reporters just saying, yeah, look, he's been diagnosed with COVID-19, and a long silence left there afterwards because nobody could believe it. This was worst case scenario in terms of the weekend for John, because he had to pull out of the tournament. So what a dramatic way for that to happen. But nobody is going to be as disappointed as John Rahm this weekend.
We did promise the people more Formula One content, Shane. Where are we going next in the red?
So I'm going to go a red weekend for Nikita Mazepin, Owen. So he's a Haas driver in Formula One, and he's a crap driver. I'm going to put it out there. He is bad at driving cars. Now, it was an enjoyable Formula One weekend. Anyone who saw the Azerbaijan Grand Prix in Baku, beautiful looking city, kind of some of the streets are a bit Monaco-esque in terms of the feel of the race, but there is a little bit more overtaking that might have happened at Monaco. I mean, Lewis Hamilton ended up in 15th. He led the race at one point, had a lockup, which was entirely his own fault. Pirelli tyres got a bit of slack as well. Max Verstappen of Red Bull led at one point and had a rear blowout, and Pirelli taking a lot of stick. But it led to a win for his Red Bull teammate, Sergio Checo Perez. Driver of the day, probably Sebastian Vettel. And, you know, he was just incredible. The experience he's got over the years, the battles he's had with Lewis Hamilton over the years. Driver of the day with Aston Martin. The first ever podium for Aston Martin as well. And then a battle you had towards the end between Pierre Gasly, Charles Leclerc and Lando Norris for the podium in third. And Gasly ends up doing it. But, I mean, Nikita Mazepin, Owen, I don't know how I can defend this guy, because he's a teammate of Mick Schumacher, famously the son of Michael. And Mick, it was only his sixth Formula One race, and avoided a massive accident, essentially, against his own teammate. So there was one point that they were approaching Mazepin's slipstream. They were approaching speeds of 200 miles per hour on the start-finish straight. So a place where overtaking generally is encouraged and considered by drivers. Mazepin suddenly moved to the right in a move to prevent his teammate Mick Schumacher from getting by, and squeezed him against the concrete wall. Now, Schumacher responded just in time to avoid what would have been a fairly bad accident. And you can see as he passed Mazepin, Schumacher is gesticulating wildly with his arms. And then he starts talking over the radio. What the F was that? Honestly, seriously, does he want to kill us? Which is just an extraordinary thing to hear over Formula One radio. And Formula One radio is great anyway. You get some serious nuggets out of any weekend's racing. But the fact that a teammate is saying that, does he want to kill us? Seriously. And look, you might ask, how did Nikita Mazepin become a Formula One driver? There's only 20 places on the grid. Is it just insane talent? No. Is it the hours of practice he puts in? No. Is it the fact that he's the son of a Russian billionaire oligarch, Dmitry Mazepin, who brings a lot of money with him into the team? Yes, probably, I would say, is why Nikita Mazepin is driving in Formula One. So, I mean, Gunther Steiner, the Haas team principal, came out afterwards and tried to kind of diffuse the situation, say there isn't a problem between these drivers. But at the end of the day, and you can also look this up on YouTube, Owen, there are compilation videos of times Nikita Mazepin has made mistakes or driven other drivers insane on the team radio, saying, what is this guy doing? So Nikita Mazepin, bad weekend for you, and you are bad at driving Formula One cars.
To make matters worse, he's going to be drafted into the Russian army at some point. I see his father was talking about the fact that he needs to join, obviously, between the ages of whatever it is, 18 and 28 or something like that. And that predicament is coming down the line for him pretty soon. But then again, if your dad can get you into the Formula One
Championship, then he might be able to get you off with maybe a shortened term in the Russian army, but maybe it would be better for everybody if he actually went and did his time. So they're the bad, Shane. They're your reds gone. So let's move into the amber, the kind of not so good or the not so great. I see the FAI are down here in the orange this morning. Why are they in orange?
Yeah, I'm going to go amber for the FAI because, and I've only chosen amber because to balance this out, we didn't have the shock, terrible defeat against Andorra that threatened for all of 6 minutes the other night and managed to avoid the worst defeat in their history. So for that reason, the FAI get off a little bit lightly here. But for Lee Carsley reasons, it hasn't been the greatest of weeks for the FAI. So we all remember when Damien Duff stepped aside from his role as Stephen Kenny's assistant. Number of names thrown into the ring. John O'Shea was one. He's doing great work with Reading as a first-team coach. Anthony Barry ultimately gets the job. And look, you can't doubt Anthony Barry's credentials. Probably a bit of a surprise pick at the time. But the fact is, he's now a Champions League winning coach with Chelsea. He's a great person to have involved in the Irish camp. I saw Seamus Coleman congratulating him at training the other day when he came back into the team after that Champions League win for Chelsea over Man City. But Lee Carsley is the one that got away, Owen. So we all know his credentials as a coach now. And look, a person who had a seriously good career with Ireland. I think it was 40-odd caps he had with the Republic of Ireland as a player. But the reports that this week were that Lee Carsley is set to be appointed as England under-21 manager, so replacing Eddie Boothroyd. Nicky Butt was involved in, one of the people that they interviewed that was in up for the role. Paul Tisdale was another. But it appears that the deal is reportedly set for Lee Carsley to take that job, which is a huge job for Lee Carsley to take over as the England under-21 coach. Worked in coaching and management for 9 years, retired back in 2011. He's worked with the likes of Man City. He's worked with Pep Guardiola, coached the likes of Jadon Sancho, Phil Foden in City underage setups. The experience he's garnered over the last number of years is quite incredible. And he's got those 40-odd caps. A lot of people will talk about that playoff, the Euro 2000 playoff against Turkey, harshly penalised for handball. Dropped by Mick McCarthy for the second leg of that game. Only spent 2 minutes on the pitch at the 2002 World Cup. But the fact is, he's now a coach that we should be chasing left, right and centre to get involved in the Irish setup at some point. It feels like a missed opportunity now because he's kind of tied into this England under-21 gig. And what a gig it is for him. I saw Football Insider was one of the reports I read at the time. And I called him Englishman Lee Carsley. So this is what's going to happen. Hmm. He's going to be called an Englishman if he starts taking these big gigs, and we're all going to forget that he was an Irish player at one point. So one that got away for the FAI, I think, Owen, and it's a bit disappointing to see him. For him, of course, he's going to take that job. It's an offer he can't refuse, but it feels like one that got away for the FAI.
Yeah, like at the same time, it is a pathway where you think to yourself, what can actually be done to try and tap into that resource that exists there. He goes into coaching with Coventry after finishing his career there, and really a couple of years later it's with Manchester City and the academy there that he starts to build up a real reputation. I know that he would have been on the show quite a few times actually during his time at Manchester City talking through the work he was doing there, and it was really at that moment I think everybody kind of became aware that, oh, hold on, Lee Carsley actually has something here. Somebody thinks that this guy is very, very good at what he does. And obviously the gig started getting more important, he started to get more responsibility, and then the national interest from the FA actually came. So they were quick to act on what they saw over in England. And I'm just not sure if people in the FAI actually realised how good this guy was, because there was clearly an effort to try and promote homegrown coaches over the last couple of years, in particular when those couple of contracts were handed out for the Mick McCarthy era, followed by the Stephen Kenny era. And I just wonder how involved Lee Carsley's name was in those conversations, because as you rightly point out there, already at that point his CV was indicative of somebody who was going to go quite far in this coaching game. It's interesting as well, actually. I know it's not fully confirmed yet, is it? So is there going to be a little bit of a bidding war here for Lee Carsley? I know Duncan Ferguson has said that he would love to have him in as assistant if he was to become Everton boss over the next little while. So this is a man in high demand. The great thing is, if Lee Carsley was interested in ever coming back and working with the FAI, you're getting somebody who is unbelievably experienced. But the flip side of that coin is that Gareth Southgate is a former England under-21 manager. The pathway, once you get that 21's job in England, is pretty sweet if you do a good job. And the great news for Lee Carsley is that his predecessor was Eddie Boothroyd, who let's face it, wasn't exactly the most amazing under 21 manager, doesn't exactly leave behind him a glittering reputation for Carsley to live up to. So everything is aligned pretty well for him at this point.
I mean, it's a major promotion. There's no getting away from that. But the fact is, he's had the experience now, as you said. He's managed Coventry as a caretaker. He's managed Birmingham as a caretaker. Brentford he's managed as well. So, you know, when he moved into that full-time role with the FA, on a full-time basis, that was a sign that they were putting their faith in Lee Carsley. They thought this guy is a serious coach. Even our own former man, Kevin Kilbane, you know, I know he's a good friend of Lee Carsley's, and he was kind of talking on Twitter last night about the fact that he is an exceptional coach. And it seems anyone who's worked with him kind of says the same. I know you've had him on the show, as you said before, and his knowledge of the game is incredible. And he's someone that clearly puts a lot of thought into coaching. He probably lies awake at night thinking about coaching. This is his talent. I don't want it to be one that got away for the Republic of Ireland. At some point, as you said, he might be a future Republic of Ireland manager. Who knows? But you kind of have to think, and you mentioned it there, the fact that there's been a kind of a homegrown push for homegrown assistants with Robbie Keane and Damien Duff are involved. They've kind of gone outside the box a little bit, Stephen Kenny, with Anthony Barry. But having said that, if Anthony Barry is a success, which, you know, unquestionably he probably will be, but if he brings Ireland to a major tournament under Stephen Kenny, you cannot question the decision making that they didn't go for a homegrown coach at this point. But look, Lee Carsley is someone who knows down the tracks he could be the most experienced Irish manager ever, and with a CV that is the envy of a lot of coaches around the world. So it mightn't be the end of the Lee Carsley FAI story, but for this weekend, I guess it's a disappointing one.
Yeah, and I think it'll be the best case scenario of the current Irish setup works out really well at under 21 level and at senior level, and if Lee Carsley also works out well, because I think it's fair to say we'd all love to see him doing really well as England under 20s manager. And then it's kind of like, oh, hold on a minute, there's actually a few Irish coaches dotted around Ireland and the UK who are doing really well for themselves, and that cannot be a bad thing for the future of the game here at least. So that is your amber this week, Shane, because the FAI maybe missed a trick with Lee Carsley over the last couple of years. But on more positive things, we're going to the green in this morning's performance rankings. What are we starting with here?
Yeah, green in the performance rankings. The green of Limerick, Owen, is where we're going to start, because I guess hurling fans over the last number of weeks will be looking at the National League and thinking, OK, Limerick have lost a couple of games here. Lost to Galway, lost to Waterford. And you're starting to think, are Limerick normal? Are they a normal team? They're league champions, All-Ireland champions, a terrifying prospect. But they lose these couple of games, and you're thinking, okay, maybe we're going to have quite an exciting year ahead in the hurling. But then they put up 33 points at the Gaelic Grounds over the weekend against Cork, and you're just thinking to yourself, this Limerick team are something else. Because when you think about the players that they didn't even have involved at the weekend, Owen, Kyle Hayes, Seamus Flanagan, Garoge Hegarty, Dan Morrissey, Mike Casey, Nicky Quaid, David Dempsey, that's terrifying. They have players to come in, and the ruthless start in that game is something you would think to yourself, this is what champions do. 20 points to 1-7 ahead at halftime, even by the first water break. And this is clearly something that they're targeting as well. 11 points to 1-3 ahead, 4 scores to 11. I mean, Cian Lynch was excellent for them in that game. 3 points from play, integral to everything good they did in the match. And they finished with 12 different scorers, which just shows the talent in this Limerick team. And a lot of them young boys as well. There's players that have kind of come in this year and been really, really exciting. Cathal O'Neill started in attack against Galway, came on in the match against Cork at the weekend. Colin Coughlin made his debut at wing-back. Both had scored a couple of points each in that game as well. So clearly have no fear coming into this Limerick team. But they were just scary, turning over some of those Cork puckouts for anyone who saw the match. Now, you might think to yourself, maybe it's shadow boxing a little bit. I know they play Cork in the championship in Thurles in 4 weeks' time. But you can say that all you want. At the end of the day, they still want to win these games, especially after losing a couple. And I listened to John Kiely's interview after the game. He talked about work rate. You know, he talked about use of the ball. He talked about their energy levels. So clearly they're a fit team at the moment as well, Limerick. And their patience in tackling as well is another thing. And the fact that they're working as a unit. So, I mean, that I know it's only one game, and you don't want to lump any predictions based on one game. But ultimately, look, I know Cork came back a bit in the second half and won the second half, in fact, but that 33-219 win at the Gaelic Rounds for Limerick could spell trouble for some of the teams later in the championship that they play against.
Yeah, Limerick were very, very, very angry on Saturday night, it turned out. Like, you do write this team off at your peril, and maybe Limerick had been, I don't know, a little bit aware of what was being said about them over the last few weeks and was like, screw that, we are still Limerick. And you kind of point to a few of the new names that are coming through. It's just interesting to see how well this conveyor belt actually gets tested over the next little while, because people are like, why are Limerick so good? What happened to Limerick over the last few years? And people point to the brilliant work that's been done on a development level, which, of course, is the truth when it comes to their two All-Irelands in 3 years. But I do think the litmus test is how they go over the next 5-10 years to see when this team, the great team of the last couple of years, starts to phase out. Are the new kids, and you mentioned a few of them there, at that level as well. The very early signs are that they might be, and that this actually could be a terrifying force in hurling over the next decade or so, this Limerick team. But they were awesome on Saturday night, and I guess they're just kind of back to their best, where they're not overly concerned about goals. They will pick you off consistently over the course of 70-80 minutes, and you don't really stand a hope with the score that they will put up on a points tally, because they will get 30 plus points if they have a decent day. They don't even need to be amazing, they just need to be decent, and they'll put up 30 something points against you. So that's just an awesome unit and very, very hard to stop. But as you say, 3rd of July is the real one. Well, there just has to have been a little bit of shadow boxing about it, but the early signs, maybe from Cork's perspective, not great ahead of that one. You'd certainly favour Limerick heavily after the performance they put in on Saturday night. So that is our hurling for the performance rankings. We are going to be joined by James Skehill, by the way, in about 10 minutes time to look back on the weekend's hurling as a whole, because there is a load of great stuff to get into. But Shane Hannan, we are finishing this morning with the performance rankings, with the green in the performance rankings, with the most important sporting event of the weekend.
Indeed. Floyd Mayweather's bank account is certainly in the green this weekend, Owen. After that, would you call it a fight? Maybe we'll call it a fight for argument's sake, but against the YouTube personality Logan Paul during the weekend. Went the eight rounds that it was supposed to go. Mayweather landed 43 blows to Logan Paul's 28. I don't know why I'm analysing the fight like it's a normal fight. I'll stop doing that now. Leaves a bit of a weird taste in the mouth watching something like this, when you know it's, there's no winner. There's no, I guess, record after it. There's no anything, really. Logan Paul's only attribute that he brings to this is that he has 66 million social media followers, some of whom, a lot of whom, in fact, would have been pay-per-view buyers at the weekend. Mayweather's 20 years older than him. Logan Paul has a 4-inch reach over him, 34 pounds over him as well. At 189 pounds, by far the heaviest fighter that Floyd Mayweather has ever faced in his career. Mayweather could probably finish this fight if he wanted to. There was another element of, knowing the audience, knowing that, maybe there could be a rematch at some point. I won't knock him out here. I'll let this go 8 rounds. But the fact of the matter is, there were boos at the end of the fight, understandably, because it felt like a bit of a light sparring session for Floyd Mayweather. I guess people in the crowd either wanted to see Mayweather knock Logan Paul out, or the absolute shock that would have been Logan Paul winning. Neither of those things happened, so left the fans a little bit, I guess, upset. But if you look at the money involved here, so sold at $49.99 a pop on pay-per-view, and then you had the audience at Miami's Hard Rock Stadium where the fight took place. Mayweather said last week he expected to earn between $50 and $100 million from the fight, and then Logan Paul was guaranteed $250,000 and a 10% cut, more importantly, of pay-per-view earnings. So what a good weekend for Floyd Mayweather's bank account and Logan Paul's bank account, for those that care about Logan Paul and his own YouTube career. But Floyd spoke afterwards and he said, when it comes to legalized bank robbing, I'm the best. And he's not wrong there. As he described it, this was a heist, a money-making machine for the two men. And that's all that really matters. You can give out of it, Floyd Mayweather, tarring his name, tarring his legacy, taking part in a fight like this. But at the end of the day, if you're offered $50 to $100 million to get into a ring against a YouTuber and you're Floyd Mayweather, I mean, I'm sorry, you're not really going to say no, are you? You're just going to get in there and do the business, do the 8 rounds, leave the possibility of a rematch there for the taking, come out afterwards, as Floyd did, and say, oh, he was actually a better fighter than I thought, which is complete crap, to be fair. He's not a boxer. He's just a YouTube prankster. But at the end of the day, for Floyd Mayweather's bank account, it was a very, very good weekend, Owen.
It's good to note that that's what his selling point is, prankster, YouTube prankster. I was never aware and I just didn't find the time in my schedule to actually find out what he is or who he is. So pranks is obviously his thing. I just do love the temerity of the crowd to get up and boo something that they knowingly paid for. They were like, oh, Floyd Mayweather versus YouTube prankster ended up not being a very good sporting event. I'm therefore going to boo despite the fact that I've paid for a said sporting event. What a shock that this is. Floyd Mayweather not knocking out a man and engaging in a pretty dull fight. Who would have thought that that would have happened? So, oh God, I don't know. People are interesting, Shane Hannon, there to actually go and pay for that. I would dare say that was nowhere near your sporting bucket list. This is not the Belgian Grand Prix. This is not something you would be happy to part money with. But you know what? Some people are happy to part money with this, and good luck to them. Good luck to people who wanted to actually watch this, but to actually pay the money and then show up and then boo it afterwards. I don't know, just smacks of a little bit of hypocrisy, to be quite honest. But Floyd Mayweather, congratulations to you. Your bank account is in a much better place than it was last week. That is this week's performance rankings. We'd love to hear your thoughts on who should have made Shane's list.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetZetGo.ie.